Okay. So I want to continue this theme of aging, inconvenient truth, or spiritual gateway. So the story goes, when I was 9 months old, I crawled out of my playpen and walked over to my mom and started tugging on her. And so the family lore is, you know, Peter was always a coordinated kid, athletic. I played a lot of sports. I was a major jock as a kid. And, you know, I always thought, like, I was pretty good. My family somehow thought I was better than I was. but I was very competitive, and that was just the body that I came into this world with. And my main love of sports-wise has been soccer, and I, as I said before, I got to play till I was 55. One of my best friends growing up, really incredible soccer player, he had to stop in his early 30s with two knee injuries. I got to go to 55. And, you know, I've just had very, very good health. Never used my health insurance. And then I hit 55. I'd had this sort of blessing of this body that was just naturally pretty healthy. And none of that was in my control. I mean, it was. I could have, like, you know, become a drug addict or smoked a lot of cigarettes or whatever. So that was in my control. But just having kind of a naturally healthy body was not my choice. It was just my gift. And also then out of my control, 2 years ago, I developed a heart arrhythmia. It's benign, but I had to go through a huge series of tests. Apparently, one test, I just learned this, they didn't tell me at the time, but I got exposed to the equivalent, it was a nuclear stress test. Some of you might know that test for your heart. But I just learned, while I was sitting there sort of ho-humming it in the laboratory room, that where it was basically I had ingested a radioactive tracer, and then you know, the machine was able to image the blood flow through my heart. Amazing technology, and they could see that though I had a heart arrhythmia, as they say, the as long as the electrical doesn't affect the plumbing, there's no big deal. The main thing is the plumbing and making sure that the blood is getting enough heart to itself and to the body. And so this nuclear stress test showed no ischemia, you know, really, like, apparently this is like the, you know, the mother of all heart tests. And so I got a clean slate, and I got to see my heart in ultrasound, which, if you've never had that experience, is pretty amazing. The heart is really working hard in there. And this benign heart arrhythmia that is, as they have told me, is just going to get worse with age. That's what happens to heart. It's like, okay, well, thank you for the information. I guess that's good to know. And my partner, Lisa, keeps wondering, well, you know, when, like, how much? And I'm like, well, they don't really know, and I don't really know. So that was one health challenge, out of my control. Like, wow, suddenly the heart is doing this. There's some things I can control, you know, don't drink too much alcohol, caffeine, etc. But for the most part, for whatever reason, after 57 years of being in this body, my heart just has this arrhythmia. And then 2 years ago on retreat at Spirit Rock, on a month-long retreat, the very first day of the retreat on a run, I tore my meniscus in my knee, and did a retreat, you know, just, I wasn't going to leave retreat, and I did the retreat, and eventually came back, and I've had this long, a lot of you know this, a long saga of very slow recovery from knee surgery, which is a very mild knee surgery. And what's going on with this body, you know, it's like 20 different, you know, doctors, acupuncturists, masseuses, physical therapists, medical qigong ladies. I can't even tell you all the acronyms, you know, of the people that have been trying to help me. Nobody can figure this out. Something's going on with my hip and my back, and it's hard for me to walk. And as someone who's been a former wildlife biologist and passionate nature person, I haven't been able to take a hike in 2 years because just the irregularity in the trails. I can now walk enough to do my life, you know, to just to do the practicalities, and I'm getting better very slowly. So there's this limited amount of things we can do with our bodies as we age, and then there's the rest. You know, my body has its own agenda, and it's my job to care as best I can for this body. So I can say I've been very blessed up until 2 years ago. Now the question is, am I still blessed? Now that there's health challenges. So let's just consider this as a group. We all have some version of health challenges. Some of us are going through a very intense trial with health issues. Some of us have been through intense trials. Some of us might have loved ones or parents or kids even who have intense health trials. So our job is to control what we can control. We can't control that we were miraculously born. You just popped out into this world as the best gift that we could ever have. We've already been given the best gift we could ever get, right? Which is life. We were given that. Isn't that amazing? Here we are. Every day is a gift because we were born. That we're here at all is a gift. So we have this job of accepting the gift. If we want to, we don't have to. And we'll be miserable. And that's our choice. We get to be miserable. We're entitled. If we want it, we can have it. And we can choose otherwise. So we control what we can control. We take care of the outer circumstances that we can. But most of our well-being is unrelated to circumstances. Circumstances change for the better or change for the worst. And what neuroscience research is showing now is that in our brain, there's a ratio in the middle frontal gyrus or right and left frontal gyrus, somewhere up here. And there's kind of a baseline happiness set point. And when the ratio is higher left to right, we tend to be happier. And when it's higher right to left, we tend to be unhappier. And that tends to be a ratio that's fairly stable, independent of circumstances. So we can win the lottery or we can end up in a wheelchair. And the happiness ratio in the brain changes some. And then it comes back to kind of its regular place. So even neuroscience maps that outer circumstances can affect us for a while. But what happens? We get used to the outer circumstance. You win the lottery, $5 million, it solves a lot of problems. And so you climb that cliff. But instead of getting to a peak where you live on top the rest of your life, looking down at the rest of the world, you climb the cliff, you get to the top, and then you get used to it. And then you realize all you did was come to a plateau. And it's a big plateau. And it wasn't a mountain peak. It was an illusion. we get used to our circumstances, whether they're bad or good. And we're very adaptable. So we adapt to the bad and make the best of it. We also adapt to the good and just sort of just get used to it. And then instead of it being a peak, it's a plateau. Yeah, we climbed a cliff, but really, we're just back to flat ground. So inner circumstances are the primary determinant of your happiness. Meaning, your attitude, we can control it. So we got this gift of being born into an impermanent body, a body that ages. So what are you going to do with that? How are you going to relate to the fact of your aging? Well, again, we have a choice. We can choose to kind of go with the conditioning of the culture. Youth is good, you know, getting old is bad and it's decline. You can choose that. It's your prerogative. Or you can choose to make the best of it and work on your attitude. And so let's make the choice for the second, at least today. What is good about aging? This is really important because this is the deck, this is the hand we've been dealt. So how are you going to make the best of this? What's good about it? Just consider. You can't stop the aging. All you can do is change your attitude. So, consider what's good. Please, and then any volunteers? What's one good thing about aging, please? Gratitude? Say more. So one way of looking at impermanence is big bummer, but another way is impermanence leads to gratitude. Yeah, it can. But with age, would you say you're better or worse at the gratitude piece?
Oh, much better.
So much better with age. So you're growing up. Your gratitude is maturing.
I think so.
Nice. Please.
Even when you get older, you don't ever have to give up the thrill of meeting challenges. I remember my mother, she had two hips new, two knees new, and for her, the marathon was getting up the front steps. But, you know, there's always a next. Let me go for it.
Nice. So we still, with age, have the gift of having a challenge and meeting it and feeling good when we can meet it.
Mm-hmm. Starting to enjoy myself as well as the person that I am.
Mm.
It took me a long time. I mean, I hope I can do it before I die.
Mm.
So I don't have to come back and do this.
So you're much better at loving yourself as you are. Definitely improves with age. Please. Nice. So with less competition, I'm just repeating for the mic, for less competition, we relax more. And yeah. Please.
I think we take life less seriously sometimes, which is like a nice big exhale.
So we take life less seriously. We get a better sense of humor, which feels like a big exhale. Have people heard of the U curve? the curve of life, that we're pretty happy as kids often, but of course not always. And then as we go into young adulthood, our happiness comes down and into sort of, early middle age, our happiness sort of bottoms out, you know, maybe 30s. And then happiness starts going up into our 40s and 50s and 60s. And this is just based on people's self-report. How you doing? Oh, I'm doing pretty well now that I'm no longer in middle school or high school or college or, you know, really struggling to make ends meet and develop a career, you know. So for many people, life gets better with age after about 35, according to some studies. Please.
Yeah, I think my experience has been I've become a bit less competitive because I can't compete. So either you resist it or you give into it. Like, if you try to compete when you're 65, you're going to hurt yourself. You're going to lose anyway. So you might as well just relax.
Well, if I could paraphrase, only once you're a loser do you give up the competing. Yeah, but you could still compete with 65-year-olds. You know, you could be in the 65 and over category, right? But so you've let go of something there. Yeah.
For me, anyway, there's a kind of unlearning that goes on. Learning how to get out of all the boxes that education and society and culture have sort of tried to steer us into, and then with that comes a feeling of liberation and happiness and more in touch with who I am.
Nice.
Apart from all of that.
So with age, we get to drop the cultural conditioning and just be more authentic. Is that a fair summary? We can just be those kind of like eccentric old people, right? Oh, well, he's just old, right? So again, this is our task. What we can most affect is our inner world. As our body starts falling apart, as our mind even starts falling apart, what we can most change is our relationship with what's happening. It's hard to go against the river, you know, and try to change what's happening to your body. Of course, you need to do what you can do. Of course. So this is not saying that. It's still saying no matter what you do, you're still going to age. Even if you live to be 112, you're still going to age. And so making the best of it is our job if we want it. And so I want to add to everything that people said and put it in the Buddhist context. And the Buddhist context is calling your aging. Imagine your body falling apart. There's a possibility of you getting a bad illness. One of my clients is working with skin cancer. Another is working with breast cancer. I mean, you know, this is not pretty necessarily. So the stakes are very high as we age. The more we age, the higher they get. And Buddhism calls it a heavenly messenger. Come on. What kind of religion is this? You know? Why can't we have the one that's like angels with trumpets on clouds, you know, beaming light and playing celestial music? You know, and if you think about this tradition, you don't have to think of it as a religion, because I know for a lot of people that's the R word. It's a spiritual tradition that definitely is a religion. If you go to Asia, it's practiced as a religion. This religion, this tradition believes that we get reborn. Even though there's not a self here, we're just this composite of changing elements, many changing parts, brain, heart, lungs, you know, personality quirks. And you can't find the one single thing we are. We're many things. We're multitudes. We're all these things. And then somehow this doesn't even exist as a self, even though I'm here, but then somehow that reincarnates? Ooh, that's sort of bizarre. But you only come back, according to this tradition, if you're still craving, if you're still attached. So, which is another way of saying it, as long as life sucks, you get to come back. And then once you get fully enlightened, and when life finally doesn't suck anymore, you know what happens. What happens to an arhat at death? Shaking your head. Oh, you don't know. They don't come back. Only once life finally doesn't suck do you not come back. So once you get enlightened, then you're gone for good. Now, so welcome to your tradition. that's a completely sort of pessimistic way to look at it, but there's a reason, you know, that Buddhism sometimes, you know, can seem like, oh, the first noble truth, life is suffering. That's not what the first noble truth says. But this is our tradition. And actually, instead of this being some kind of sadistic, pessimistic approach, it's an extremely optimistic approach, because it's so freaking real. What this tradition is saying is aging is like a fierce teacher that's going to force you to let go of everything that doesn't lead to your deepest, truest happiness. So this is a body that's impermanent and changes. And I had this, you know, amazing health for a big chunk of life, and then suddenly I've got health challenges. Having that health wasn't really in my control, and my body doing this is not really in my control. Right? It's out of my control. So I have to let go. We have to let go of being competitive, you know, being the excellent athletes we might have been in some way. That's not your refuge. That's not your true happiness. It's good while it lasts, but it isn't your true happiness. Your true happiness is not, and the reason Buddhism is saying it's not your true happiness is because all of those things are changing, even as they happen. So the pinnacle of my athletic career was in the finals of a playoffs on my soccer team. I kept scoring the goals that put us ahead, and I scored a hat trick, and I scored the winning goal, and we won the championship. And one of my teammates actually ran up to me and said, "You're my hero." And it was amazing. And, you know, it was somewhat out of my control. I was just playing my game, and somehow my shots went in. And, you know, so that was a case where I could take credit for, you know, doing something athletically really skilled. But you know what? It was already wearing off in the bar 30 minutes later. People stopped telling me I was their hero. And then everything sort of just went back to, you know, business as usual, and I wasn't the center of it anymore. So it was a great, you know, 45 minutes of like ecstasy. So the point is, not that any of that was bad, it was just fleeting. As spectacular as it was, that's the pinnacle of my athletic career. If I want to build my happiness on results, you know, then sure, I had some other successes too, but the successes come and go. They're fleeting. And so this aging process and letting go of our body's abilities, I don't want this to sound maudlin or morose, but the aging is kind of a fierce teacher, which makes you let go of that. And what you're really doing is letting go of the fleeting pleasures that we get from our bodies. Again, not to make it wrong, it's not. Any physical pleasure is great while it lasts, but it doesn't last. Our experience is slippery. You know, we enjoy our lunch. We actually, you know, maybe did put our hands down, our forks down, and really focused on the taste in our mouth. And maybe it was really enjoyable. I hope it was. And where is it? The food is in your belly, but the experience is gone. It doesn't pile up. And so aging is kind of aligning with that and saying, guess what? Those physical pleasures, as good as they are not your home. This body is not your home. This body is really miraculous because it was born, and this body is miraculously maintaining you right now. That too is an impermanent process out of your control. Are you right now having trouble focusing on my words because you're concentrating so much on making sure you're properly digesting? No, you don't have to do that. Right? The small intestine's taking the nutrients out, the colon is taking out the moisture from, you know, breakfast or lunch from yesterday or dinner. You don't have to do it. Your body knows what to do. So this body is this miraculous vessel of maintaining your life. You know, if you would, just feel your heartbeat. You know, take your hand to the side of your Adam's apple. And just feel your heart. Really be mindful of that pulsing. Every single moment of your life, your heart has been giving you this gift of life 60, 70, 80 times a minute, pounding away for you, for this life. Your breath is doing the same. Your heart is moving the blood, and the CO2 is coming through the veins into your lungs and getting off-gassed. You're taking in the oxygen that was put here by plants and bacteria. Every breath we take is a miracle, really. And so we have this miraculous birth, and we have this miraculous ongoing self-generation, self-maintenance. On a bad day, your heart is still beating away. On a good day, same. So our impermanent life is miraculous. It's miraculous in birth. It's miraculous in self-maintenance. And then we might say, or not, it's miraculous in death, in aging and dying, because that is the same process. The process that put us here and that keeps us here is also the process that will take us away. So that's just the package deal we got. And again, we can adapt to this, we can tolerate it, and that's much better than being bummed out by it. But we can go much better than tolerating it. We can have the aging and the impermanence be what drives us towards our true home, which is our spiritual life. So in all the good things you mentioned is great, and you can take the aging even deeper to let it be the catalyst for your spiritual path. It can light a fire under you, and it can frame your life with meaning, because it's like, I was given this precious birth and precious life. What's it for? And you might say it's for service and it's for helping. And that's beautiful. You might also say it's for awakening, that I'm very curious. What is this thing that supposedly the human heart can transform into, this awake heart? And the awake heart is a heart that is not afflicted by all the comings and goings and toings and froings, pain and pleasure. Buddhism calls it pain and pleasure, gain and loss. Forget the other one. And then the last is fame and ill repute. All the comings and goings are not where we find our true happiness. We find the true happiness in something bigger than ourselves, be it service or be it a spiritual life. Not that service isn't spiritual, but it can have a different trajectory, a different path. Are you curious? You know, when you hear about these wise people like Ajahn Chah and Story of the Boulder, I've heard Jack say Ajahn Chah, Jack Kornfield, was the wisest person he's ever met, and he's hung out with a lot. Are you curious about a mind that's so imperturbable you could be in strong physical pain but not have aversion? You know, are you curious what it would be like to be in a mind that's really awake and present? And, you know, the glimpses you've had through your practice where you finally do drop into being, and you taste how nourishing and satisfying it is to just be and to stop trying so hard. Are you curious what that's like to be in that place a lot instead of just here and there? Are you curious about just being able to sit in the backwards facing seat of the train as you go through all the chaos and complexity of your life? You're just staying present and present and present, even as all hell is breaking loose around you. Are you curious what that's like? If you are, you're in a good place, because this tradition is all about this practice helping you have the mind that is Buddha mind, which is the mind that is okay even on a bad day. Okay when you're stressed out, okay when you're happy, okay when you're falling in love, okay when you're falling out of love, okay when there's a physical issue, okay when there's not a physical issue, okay on the flight home to see your parents, okay when it's a beautiful reunion, okay when there's that pattern where they still treat you like a child even though you're 64 and you don't like it, and you're still okay. If you want that and are curious about that, then you're in the right place. This practice is about that. And so someone I worked with a few years back is having just an awful, awful time with her adopted teenage daughter. And it's like everything the mom tried. If it was the mom trying it, then it was wrong. So it was almost like there was nothing the mom could do. And she just felt in so much pain and anguish about it because really out of care for her daughter's well-being and seeing her daughter go down a really difficult path. The single thing that helped her find some kind of peace with it is she learned to just say unpleasant when she and her daughter were just going at it. And she still doesn't know why, and she's not even someone who practices all that much. She doesn't know why, but that single idea where you could just take all the drama and all the kerfuffle and just say unpleasant. And that just gave her breathing room. And you know, that was her doing the best she could in those difficult circumstances. That was her basically saying, what can I do? I can't control my daughter. I will try to do what I think is best. And what do I do in the meantime? Well, that was one thing that really helped her. But Dharma is so vast and complex. There's many ways it affects us. And so my hope is that your own aging becomes your catalyst to get your butt on the cushion and practice. So we don't live in a culture that values very strongly deep practice. Our culture is so materialistic and so speedy that we're sort of just going the opposite direction. You know how on the TV screen, like the news that used to be just the full screen was the broadcaster, but then you started to get the crawl, and then, you know, the stocks, and then you get the second crawl, which is the sports, and now you have the side crawl, which is like the stories that are gonna come, and the little broadcaster in the TV is getting smaller and smaller. So we're not even very good at distracting ourselves very well because we're trying so badly to distract ourselves that I don't know. I don't know how we do it. So Buddhism takes the approach that this aging, this thing that we think is an affliction, is medicine. It's not poison, it's medicine. It's urging you to let go. Let go of chasing fleeting things and start going for things that are more reliable. And so from this perspective, aging is seen as a good thing. You're going to have to let go of your body through aging. You're going to have to let go of your mental capacities to some extent. And this would all be very bad news if there wasn't an alternative, but there is. And the alternative is a mindfulness-based spiritual path. And there's other spiritual paths, so I'm not in any way knocking those. I'm saying this is one that is completely all about addressing our aging. It's all about using aging as the catalyst. It wants to give you urgency. Your mortality and your impermanence is a call to urgency. Spiritually urgent, going for what really matters for you spiritually. Not squandering your time on things that aren't really going to give you true happiness. And so one teacher, a Tibetan teacher, Geshe Gyaltsen, I was on retreat with him, and he said, think of your difficulty, and this is kind of the Tibetan cosmology, so just bear with me. Think of your difficulty as a miracle performed by the Buddhas to get you to practice. Buddhism says the human form, there's many forms in Buddhist cosmology. There's gods, there's people, beings in hell realms. There's the human realm, there's the animal realm. The human realm is the only one where enlightenment can happen. In the God realm, there's too much pleasure, and gods live, you know, for centuries, and there's so much pleasure, there's no motivation to look deeper. In the other realms, the more suffering realms, it's too hard to be motivated to awaken. The human realm is just the right mix of trouble and blessing for you to be motivated to look deeper. And if you're here, you're probably motivated to look deeper. You know that something isn't quite working with business as usual. And you know that it's very important to you to get better at being here right now. Right? It's the essence of our practice is remember the one thing we're doing today, just remembering to come back to right here. So do it, please. Come back. How are you doing right now? You didn't know what I was going to say. And you don't know what I'm going to say, so let go. Just feel your body. This is your home. This ability to be aware of what's happening is what you can take to your last breath. Your ability as you know, a basketball player, tennis player, swimmer, runner, that's not going to help you to your last breath. You're going to have to let go of that. Your ability as a very skilled person at your job is eventually going to have to be let go of. And as important as that is, it's not your true home. Your true home is being mindful of this moment. So do it, please. Come back. Feel your body. So one of you was talking about how you lighten up with age. Jan was mentioning, right? And what can we do sometimes but laugh, right? We can laugh at ourselves. We can laugh at our tradition. The Buddhist tradition is very funny. If you think it is, it's kind of funny that you don't come back once you're fully enlightened. And you only come back when life sucks. It's kind of funny that, here's a Buddhist compliment, I've never met anybody so thoughtless in my life. It's kind of funny to see a meditator going through real pain, real heartbreak. A meditator really pissed off. A meditator just overwhelmed with joy. It's kind of funny. Anyone driving by watching us do our slow walking, kind of funny. is this a mental institution? I didn't know Columbine got turned into the mental health center. We can poke fun at ourselves. There's a great cartoon of two ducks sitting in a little puddle. It's a Bruce Eric Kaplan cartoon. And one duck, these ducks are clearly in Boulder, because one duck is saying to the other, maybe you should ask yourself why you're inviting all this duck hunting into your life. Oh yeah, the doctor, you know, this gentleman walks into the doctor's office, they take his blood pressure, and the doctor says, we need to get that down a bit. Put him on the scale, weigh him, we need to get this down a bit. They review the cholesterol reading, we need to get this down a bit. And then the doctor asks the guy, how old are you? The guy says, 57. Well, doc's going to say, we need to get that down a bit. Billy Collins has a great poem about aging called Forgetfulness. The name of the author is the first to go, followed obediently by the title, the plot, the heartbreaking conclusion, the entire novel, which suddenly becomes one you have never read, never even heard of. As if one by one, the memories you used to harbor decide to retire to the southern hemisphere of the brain, to a little fishing village where there are no phones. Long ago, you kissed the names of the nine muses goodbye and watched the quadratic equation pack its bag. And even now, as you memorize the order of the planets, something else is slipping away. A state flower, perhaps. The address of an uncle, the capital of Paraguay. Whatever it is you are struggling to remember, it is not poised on the tip of your tongue, not even lurking in some obscure corner of your spleen. It is floated away down a dark mythological river whose name begins with an L, as far as you can recall. Well on your own way to oblivion, where you will join those who have even forgotten how to swim or ride a bicycle. No wonder you rise in the middle of the night to look up the date of a famous battle in a book on war. No wonder the moon in the window seems to have drifted out of a love poem that you used to know by heart. We gotta laugh. You know, you can go on the internet and find stuff like this, funny tombstones. On the grave of Ezekiel Akel in East Dalhousie Cemetery, Nova Scotia, here lies Ezekiel Akel, age 102, the good die young. On Margaret Daniels' grave at Hollywood Cemetery, Richmond, Virginia, she always said her feet were killing her. In a Thurmont, Maryland cemetery, here lies an atheist, all dressed up and no place to go. So, I want to just talk a little bit about our practice. Why would we be focusing on impermanence in our moment-to-moment experience, in our practice, on a day focused on aging? You might say, well, because, you know, we're aging, so that's impermanence. Right, but that's a very, very slow-motion process. The impermanence that we're tuning into in our practice, if you've noticed in your body, is momentary. It's happening. We think of this body, we say, the body, my body, sort of like it's a book on a shelf, static. But when we focus on the actual experience of our body, what do we find? We find sensation, and for the most part, what's that sensation doing? Changing, yeah? Buzz, tingle, throb, pulse, flutter. This body is a flow. It's not a thing. It's a flow of experience. And what Dharma says is when you see clearly, you let go. We get attached to things because we think of them as solid and unchanging. And we think of this body as some solid, unchanging thing, instead of its true nature, which is this flow of sensation. When you feel your body, that's pretty much what you feel. We have to see this again and again and again and again. The mind freezes things with concepts, a body, a river, a day. These are nothing but flow, but we turn them into substances. We substantialize them, and then all the trouble starts. So this focus on impermanence is super important because it's what helps us let go moment by moment. And so if you picture a waterfall, and that waterfall has a form and a shape, but you're also smart enough to know there's no there there. It's a form without substance. You could not lean on a waterfall. It would be a very bad idea. So when we see everything is flow, we understand naturally a waterfall is just flow, even though it has a shape and a form. We wouldn't lean on it. It would be ridiculous. The point of our practice is to understand we are that waterfall. Our thoughts, our images, our sensations, the sounds we're aware of, the sights, the smells, the tastes, it's a waterfall of experience. It's coming and going all day long. And the good news is, when you see clearly, you let go. You wouldn't lean on a waterfall because it's obvious you don't want to do that. You will suffer. The same is true. To lean on this body or this mind to be a certain way, you're going to tumble over and get sort of swept down the waterfall because you thought it was solid, but it's not. It's changing. So our practice is focused specifically on the impermanence of the body experience, of sensations. It makes tremendous sense to do in the context of aging. So I hope that's clear. We're going to keep going with this practice of focusing on change. We think of aging and death, you know, as some impermanence kind of waiting for us at the end. What Buddhism says is it's happening all day. Aging and death are sort of bigger expressions of impermanence, but your whole day is impermanent. Today, how many different moods have you had? How many different thoughts? It's flow, it's a waterfall. And when you see it clearly, you let go. You just let go. And it's not anything tricky. It's just as simple as not leaning on a waterfall. So aging is just another flavor of impermanence. As you see impermanence all day long, when you get a bigger dose of impermanence, you know, through a health challenge, you already are down with it. You already understand. And it's going to make you want to let go even more. Somewhere in here, I tried to write a poem about this once. For what it's worth, I'm going to read it to you. This poem is called Hummingbird. Death, my dear appalling friend, not just some dusty burst of wind that ends my time here, tugging me out of the headlights like a tumbleweed, but an everyday presence, loyal as an old dog. As sure as a shadow rejoining a footstep, you take everything back a moment after giving it, offering only one place to stand. It is here in the pulsing of silence between heartbeats, in the resting of the wave before it slides back to the sea. Here where fear is its own comfort, desire its own fulfillment, the question answer enough. I am struck grateful and dumb, knowing just this. The ghost, the past is a ghost, the future a dream, and the present moment teeters on colt legs. A laugh from a sandbox, an old man passing by in the window of a bus, the emerald flash of a hummingbird in a spotless morning sky.
Okay.
Please.
That's all very sweet. The body sucks.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, it's hard.
Yes.
It's nasty.
Yes.
It's painful.
Yes.
I mean, just say,
yes.
Well, you know, the environment side, just let it go. I mean, those are nice words, but it's you know, you know, I trouble with that, turning those words into a different way of approaching the suckiness of
yes.
deterioration or whatever
yes.
you want to put it. You know.
Yes. So thank you for just calling it like it is. Okay? Aging sucks, right? It's really unpleasant and uncomfortable to deal with the deterioration of body and mind. And much less our medical system, and let's not even go there with that, right?
Being a teenager sucks too.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm not going through that.
So, and I don't want to sit here and say, you know, I am dealing with aging and my own physical challenges. You know, just ask my wife. You know. It does suck. It's really hard. What I've been surprised by is how much chronic pain can affect my outlook on life. You know, because my body's feeling negative so often, my mind goes there. And I've had to learn, you know, 10,000 times, don't believe my thoughts when my knee is in a flare-up. Because my thoughts, you know, the brain just picks up sticks. So if I'm having a bad experience in my body, I'm only going to think of the negative things in my life. I have to absolutely not make any decisions about anything when I'm having chronic pain in my knee. So this is the situation. I'm not saying, oh, this is so wonderful. I am saying we can make the best of it with all the ways that you talked about, as well as deciding that our aging is going to get pulled into our spiritual path. And when we bring it into the spiritual path, what do we really need to be able to do? We need to learn how to sit with unpleasant experience. Period. Now, we can also orient to the the gratitude and the wisdom and the loving ourselves, you know, all the things you all named, we want to orient that way too. And consider that, yeah, I'm still maturing in really important ways. But primarily what we have to learn to do to deal with the falling apart of aging is sit with unpleasant experience. And we can, this is the thing, we can do this. And what choice do we have, right? We are lucky that we have a practice that gives us a choice. You know, I watch what my mom and dad are going through in their 80s. It is shocking, like, how much pain there can be. And, you know, they are as dear as they are to me. I wish they had a spiritual practice. We at least have the ability to say, wait a minute. Oh, it's unpleasant. Oh, what's it like right now? Oh, it's unpleasant. And I know there are people sitting in this room who have transformed chronic pain through mindfulness, you know. So we have this choice. But it's hard. So I'm not sitting here trying to say la-di-da, right? Yes.
As you mentioned.
It is hard on our partners. My partner just is wishing for my knee pain to be done. So I'm not cranky. I get cranky with it sometimes, you know? So, yeah.
And then there's the other half, which is, you know, the modern medical miracles, unquote, keep saving.
Yeah.
Propelling us into the future, maybe we'd be better off without all this advanced medical.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got artificial shoulders, hips, knees.
Yes. Yes.
They keep fixing us up.
Yep.
Giving us more time to
suffer. Okay. Right. Well, that good. I'm glad. That's what you were gonna say. Please.
Yeah. A while back, you were talking about something, and now the same thing. And again, I'm not suggesting this, but of all the things that are offered to us through modern medicine, it's even legal now. If you get a terminal diagnosis and you decide the quality of your life is not going to be okay with you, and you want to pull the plug. And I thought at first, maybe that's a very considered, mindful decision. And from what you said, maybe that's not so awakened.
I cannot pass judgment on that. I don't know. Because I don't know what that's like. And I haven't been around people enough who've been dealing with, you know, like really tremendous illness and pain and terminal conditions, so I don't know. I mean, the stock Buddhist answer is suicide is considered kind of a grave mistake. But I don't know. Pro-choice. What else? Please.
Now, to listen to look at the opposite side of the acceptance and surrender and kind of going with this. And what is that? It's resistance, right? It's resisting and somehow fighting. We all know that resistance creates stuff. I've been witnessing this really firsthand with my younger brother who is dying right now. And to see shows me that, I don't know if I'll handle it any differently, but with our practices, we have the ability to, as you say, look pain head on and just be with it as much as we can, accept it, painful. He's creating a lot of suffering for himself and all those loved ones around him, just lashing out. And boy, it's like a wake-up call, too. I don't want to go that way. And so the resistance path is no place to go.
And so may your brother and all of us who have people, you know, in similar situations, or you yourself, may it be a wake-up call. You know, I mean, what else can we do? You know, and at Buddhist funerals, the chant that is recited is, everything is impermanent. See, it's slipping my memory. Age 57. Time to let go, right? All things are impermanent. To be in harmony with this truth is the deepest happiness. You know, there's tremendous wisdom in that phrase, to use it with aging and mortality. So Byron Katie, the spiritual teacher, has this incredibly simple statement. She says, things are not happening to you. They're happening for you. Aging and mortality are for us. They don't happen to us. They're for us because it can light a fire under us to go for what matters. And in the context of this tradition, to go for mindfulness and metta and our practices, why not use your time to really go for it? That's what this is for. And we're lucky. We're lucky that we even understand there is something we can do with the inevitable.
And also the not doing.
The not doing.
Because you see, my brother was not, all he knew was do. He didn't know how to be.
Right. I just appreciate you bringing it so much to home, you know. Please. Damn unpleasant. It can be fierce. It can be fierce. Yes. Please.
I just read a quick story based on what you said and what Robert said. Mother Teresa had this guy in Calcutta and he was hurting all over, and she says, the heavenly messenger thing, she says, it's Jesus kissing you. And a little later in the day he comes over, he says, could you tell Jesus to stop kissing me?
Yeah, a friend of mine says, you know, I got the message already. Do you have to keep repeating yourself? The heavenly message. Bhante Gunaratana, very, very wise monk from Sri Lanka, who's been based, he might not be alive anymore, but if he is, he's in his late 80s or early 90s. But he says, trying to control everything is impossible. And we have a choice, and our choice is basically our practice. But our practice is difficult. It's difficult to bring mindfulness to really unpleasant experiences, physical or mental. It's really difficult. But the difficult is preferable to the impossible. And so this is our choice. We can do this if we want to. It's just a question of getting your priorities straight. And I would never bash mindfulness light, because even 5 minutes of mindfulness a day is very beneficial. 20 minutes a day, you know, much more. 30 minutes, 45, an hour. The more, the better, you know. My teacher's teacher, Joseph Goldstein's teacher, Deepa Ma, she would just say to her students, she was this little power yogi from India, 4'11", grandmother. She would just say, why aren't you sitting 4 hours a day, 3 or 4 hours a day? Oh, you mean you're going home and watching TV? Why? Like, I mean, she just did not understand why people would do that. Well, she doesn't quite understand, you know, our culture and how this is business as usual. So I'm not saying go home and sit 3 or 4 hours. It's none of my business what you do. But there's, with this tradition, there's no stopping you. No one can stop you from doing that if you want to. And if you're really curious, again, about how present you can be, why not go for it? I'll just leave you with that. I think we've probably had enough, so let's just stop there. And you can take all of this now and just come back to the one thing. The one thing. What's happening right now? That's everything you need to know to deal with aging comes from that. So just keep going, and we'll do a short walking period.